Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, back on the air. Here's the Naturalist, and here we are at Roberta's restaurant at our studio, and it's a spring rainy day, and we need the rain, so don't complain too much about it. And today was a big day here. That was fascinating, and I'm going to introduce to you first my guest, Carol Butler, who's my frequent guest, because she's written all these great books. And we're going to talk about bees. Honeybees in particular. And my other guest this morning is Brandon Hoy.
Correct.
And Brandon Hoy is a partner in Roberta's.
Yep.
And he's behind a lot of projects here. Every time I come here, I'm amazed at how much work is going on with the garden next door now and the beehives and all that.
So this busy like bees.
That's right. We're just buzzing around.
Don't get him started.
Well... So anyhow, this morning I came out with Carol a little earlier than our usual time. We both live in Manhattan. We took the train out. And my daughter, Erica, who is Chef Erica, and she has a show called Why We Cook, is going into the honey business, I guess.
The bee business.
Bee business. So we were up on the roof of Jason's piece of property, and Brandon was up there because he's an expert on... hives and bees. So I'd like Brandon say hi to everybody, and we are on the air with us now, and we'll talk about getting bees started. Okay.
An expert I don't know about. Okay. This is my second year. I'm pretty confident in what we do, but I don't know about an expert.
Okay. Well,
you look like you knew what you were doing.
Well,
there.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
So Brandon helped Erica. Erica had taken a course. She bought her bees from a guy who sells bees and all the equipment
Andrew?
You need. What's his name?
Andrew. I can't remember his last
name. Okay. Andrew.
He definitely does a lot with beekeeping, urban beekeeping.
Urban beekeeping.
We can help you find him if you're interested.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about bees for the whole show, and I have some contacts for people who want to learn the business and all that.
Great.
You're not giving any courses yourself yet, are you?
No, we don't, but, you know, that's something that we would like to expand into, and here at Roberta's, we try to get people involved with a number of things, you know, the farming aspect, and... There's no reason why bees can't be one of those things that we enlighten people to.
Okay, so we were both watching you with this procedure, and I noticed that you use smoke. So what's the smoke really for, Randy?
The smoke just, you know, it kind of seduces them a little bit in a way. In nature, when the forest is burning down and they have a hive in a tree, it kind of... They all relax and they just kind of almost go dormant. And the smoke is just a way to kind of relax them and ease into the procedure. We didn't use too much smoke today, actually.
Not really.
How we did it today was we sprayed them with some with sugar water and let them feed. And I think early in the morning, they had really made a connection with the queen. Mm-hmm. And they had clustered around the queen very nicely. And... there wasn't a lot of work. They were already very, very docile, and they were ready to find their new home, and they wanted to get out of that little box.
Oh right. Yeah.
And, you know, we'll step back. Brandon just has a limited amount of time, so when he leaves, I want to describe what we saw.
Okay.
Because I think it's interesting for people to understand it, but not to take up his time. We'll do that later. We have a question.
Yes.
Right. This is apropos of the reason we have this question is New York City just passed a new regulation allowing beekeeping for the first time in the city, changing the view of them from, what were they called, vicious pests in the previous?
Well, they're called wild animals in
wild
the
animals.
City terminology.
Amazing. Wild animals.
Yeah. The regulation that outlawed them.
So I read over the regulations and all that, and you don't have to get a license. You just have to fill out a form saying who owns the hive, where it's located, and if you will be around in case they swarm.
Right.
Now... you can just describe swarming briefly, and is there any way to...
There is some swarm protection. Yeah, you can protect against swarming, but also, you know, it's a natural thing. And they swarm because of some deficiency or some problem with the hive. So it happens. I think the best thing to know is that you can control a swarm, and if there is a swarm somewhere, I will gladly come... take the swarm and bring them back to a box and
have some more bees. Right.
So,
but what I was interested in really, because I can also describe about the details of a swarm. So, but it says in there that you have to be responsible for controlling the swarm. The swarm The bees swarm because there's something wrong in the hive and they're looking for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you supposed to do as a beekeeper?
I think one of the most important part is just to facilitate a good home for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really all you can do. They're a mega organism that works as a unit.
Right.
And I think they work well together and they're really good at being bees.
Right. That's a great concept.
And that's
a mega organism.
Right.
And you just, if you can just facilitate the things that they need, if you can understand what it is that they need to live and for shelter, then I think you reduce the risk of swarming. And I think just giving them a good place to live
But they'll swarm when the queen is no longer producing eggs, let's say.
And that's true. And that's something that you need to watch. And I think by monitoring your hive and having an understanding for what's happening inside the hive, I think you can see some of those problems. You can foresee some of those problems and you can maybe prevent some of them by just understanding what's happening in your hive and being proactive.
Now, as an urban beekeeper, would you then maybe purchase another queen and introduce a queen into an existing hive?
That's a step, and I think that's one step that's...
Is that what someone... Would someone actually do that?
That's what I would do, probably.
Okay, okay.
That's what they would do in nature. They would look for a new queen,
and there's not
a queen readily available out here, probably.
They would raise a new queen.
They would raise a new queen, or...
Not too many queens in Bushwick, yes.
Well, there's a lot more bees than you would think, and we notice it here from having a growing operation that we see bees pollinating and there's bees here kind of regularly, so there are bees and bees do still live in nature in urban areas. And there's a lot of people who keep bees, and I think even before this was legalized, there was a lot of bees.
Yeah.
I mean, we kept bees all last year before it was legal, and we know hands full of people that were doing the same. And
mm-hmm. Okay. So, do you foresee more people doing it at this location, or is this for Roberta's folks to put the hives up there?
I think there'll be two more. There'll be two of ours. I have two partners, John Feldman and Eddie Diaz, who I work closely with on beekeeping. And this started off kind of, as a hobby and as a fascination for us. And now it's kind of evolved into maybe becoming somewhat of a business. And it's, directly related to what we do in the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as far as vertical integration goes, it's kind of the right step. We grow produce and we raise bees that pollinate.
And a greenhouse on top of the studio. We should describe that for the listeners.
On top of where we're having this radio station right now.
There's a garden right above us. Right.
I think this is the most unique radio station in the world.
I think so, too.
To have a green roof and a greenhouse on the roof.
Right.
And other things
and
to
now
happen.
Bees right
and
across
bees.
The street
right
and wine, which we'll tell you about later.
Yes, right. And we'll maybe one day we'll try to have a bee as a guest.
That would be nice.
Okay,
they don't talk much.
Well,
I've talked to them, and
they don't
talk much.
They're too silent. But maybe they'll buzz for us because Carol's book says why do bees buzz?
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have them buzz over the microphone.
You were mentioning some another group that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, another project that we're working on, the Brooklyn Grange, which is a 1 acre farm in Long Island City. It started off as we were looking for space in Brooklyn, and we really wanted to keep it in Brooklyn because we were so closely connected to
this
community.
Yeah, right.
But that fell through, and now we're in Long Island City, and our landlord there is amazing, and we're going to approach this like we would if it was in Brooklyn. But we are still looking for some financing, and you can find us at brooklyngrange.com, and there's a Kickstarter page there if you would like to donate any money. All the details are on our webpage. If you guys could go there and check that out, we would appreciate it.
Terrific. Yeah, that's great. Kickstarter is a great expression to use. Get things going.
Very good.
So, Brandon, I want to thank you for...
No problem.
Yeah, I know you're a busy guy.
Right. We'd love to have you for the whole show, but we
anytime.
Know you
have to anytime.
So I guess we'll ask you back again in the future when
that would be
things
great.
Are rolling.
That would be great.
And do you see a label like Roberta's Honey? In the future?
There's going to be something like that.
It might be Brandon's honey.
He's got six
hives.
And Eddie and John.
You can fit them all on the label. That'll be nice.
Right, it's small.
Three guys.
Right.
So thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Righto.
Great.
Hi, this is Bernie Wides back on the air, Heritage Radio Network, The Naturalist. And first segment, we had Brandon Hoy, who's a beekeeper, and my daughter, Chef Erica, or Erica Wides, as I know her as. And she just brought her bees today and set it up. But before we get back to bees, I want to talk about something else. We just drank a toast to the new beehives, and we drank a toast with a new sponsor. It's called the Barter House Wine Company, and it's and I'll read you this little text that I have. The Barter House is proud to support the Heritage Radio Network and its community of food lovers. The Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. Committed to sustainable agriculture and artisanal production, and you know, artisanal means small scale. It's not a big factory operation, because in the word artisanal are artisans who usually make things by hand and low-tech. The Barter House offers outstanding wines at a wide range of prices to retailers, restaurants, and private collectors. To learn more about the Barter House, please visit them on the web at www.thebarterhouse.com or call them at 917-463-3076. And this is a testimonial because we just had a sip of Barter House. What kind were we drinking, Carol?
It's Le Coteau. And it's a Côte du Rhône Village, and it's 2004.
2004
vintage. Can't get better than that. It's very delicious.
Okay, it's very nice. We just started the day off with a toast to the beehives. So now we're going to talk some more about bees. And Carol, do you want to describe some of those operations that we saw upstairs on the roof?
Yeah, it was very interesting. We actually, it's the first time I've ever seen a brand new beehive. Bernie's daughter Erica's bees were delivered, I guess, on Saturday?
Yeah, Thursday. I think she got them on Saturday,
okay.
Yeah.
So she's been spraying them with sugar water to keep them nourished since they were in a box. And as we describe in more detail in the book, but there is the queen is delivered in a little cage inside the box, and the bees swarm around her. And when we were up on the roof, what Erica did was put on her bee suit. I took a bunch of photographs. If we get any good ones, we'll put them
on the Heritage Radio
website so you can see the process. She has a chartreuse beehive.
This is a fashion statement now.
It looks like a file cabinet. And Brandon took out some of the base for the comb, and she opened the box of bees and dumped them into the hive and lifted out the box with the queen and put that in. And then I didn't see the box that she had, but what we describe in the book, the box that the queen is in actually has some honey on it. Mm-hmm. And what happens once it's put into the hive, the worker bees will eat through the honey that's enclosing the cage, and that will allow the queen to get out of the box, and then she will settle into the hive.
Okay, so she's in isolation in this box,
right,
until you put it in with the rest of the bees.
Right.
So when they ship these bees to Erica, they ship them in a container containing one of the what do you call those?
Well, I think it was just a screen box.
And the queen was in a little separate cage,
right,
just to protect them.
But it was inside among all the bees. She said 12,000 bees, 2 pounds worth of bees were surrounding the queen.
Yes, and that helped to keep her warm and to protect her.
Right, that's right.
In shipping, because bees have a problem with cool weather. Since they're insects,
right,
they have to keep the queen warm.
It also helps the bees bond to the queen,
right,
because she gives off a pheromone and they get involved with her pheromone. That's part of the way a queen controls the hive.
Mm-hmm.
And so by having them all in that small box, she's also bonding with them all so that they'll take care of her when they put them in the hive.
Yeah, by the way, before we go any further, I want to mention Carol is an author, and you probably remember her from previous shows. And she has this great book called Why Do Bees Buzz?
Right.
And we use it as a reference all the time. And Carol, what about the title, Why Do Bees Buzz? Can you just go over that?
Well,
it's a great title.
It's the way they communicate. They buzz by rubbing their wings against their bodies. And it's not really a vocal sound, but it's a vibration that is a way of communicating with other bees, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to finish describing because it was so interesting.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure everybody hasn't seen this. Erica put on her beekeeping helmet and outfit with long gloves, and she put the bees into the beehive. And then they had supplementary food that they, because it's cold and there aren't any flowers for another few weeks. And so they're going to feed the bees until there's nectar for them to go and forage.
Yeah, right. And do they do the same thing in the wintertime? How do they keep the bees? The bees should collect enough food for the winter.
In some cases, if they haven't had a lot of nectar collected, the beekeeper will supplement the stored honey to help them get through the winter. Otherwise, the colony will die. But in the natural circumstance, when there's plenty of flower, when there are plenty of flowers around, mm-hmm. they'll gather honey, they fill up the combs with honey, and then they hunker down during the cold weather inside the hive, and they feed on the stored honey until they can forage again.
Right. I just got this flashback of this morning when we were on the roof. We had to climb up onto this roof, and if you look around on the rooftop, this area of Bushwick, if you've never been here, is an industrial area. And if you look around, there are trees off and all around it, but it's pretty gray looking on the roof. And here was this site of Erica and her partner Adam, who was taking pictures, and Brandon, who was helping her with some instruction, and Carol and myself, and we're standing on this roof watching this operation, which is one of the oldest forms of animal husbandry.
Right.
And beekeeping goes back to way back
thousands and thousands of years, right?
Yeah. And here we are in this industrial area and setting up this beehive. And it's all part of Roberta's operation because... Right. They're currently working on a garden right next door to where we are now, Carol. We'll have to look at it.
Right.
Where they're planting all kinds of trees and flowers and all that stuff. So we have urban beekeepers and urban bee raises going on.
Let's talk about, just let me explain about swarming since we're talking about urban beekeeping. As we mentioned on another program about bees, New York City has one police officer whose job it is to come when there's a bee swarm that's spotted and to grab them and relocate them, because people get very upset when they see a swarm of bees clinging to a lamppost.
I would be upset.
Or clinging to their tree.
Right.
And that's why we were curious about the regulation making the beekeeper responsible. What normally happens is as the queen begins to lay fewer eggs, the colony starts to be in jeopardy because they aren't reproducing and renewing themselves.
This is an aging thing for the queen.
The queen can live like 3 years and lays thousands and thousands of eggs, but eventually she slows down. And then what happens in the colony is the colony will raise a couple of new queens, and they will come out. Usually the first one out will probably be the dominant one. Sometimes they fight. But one of the new queens will be the new leader, and she will leave the colony, and thousands of bees will swarm with her. Sometimes there's a subsequent smaller swarm led by another new queen, but they basically, a lot of the bees in the colony follow this new queen in a swarm. Before they swarm, I should say, they feed a lot so that they accumulate some body fat or some stores of nourishment in their body. And then what they do is they land somewhere. It can be on a branch or a lamppost in the city, and they gather together. They don't forage. They just stay there. And they huddle in a bunch surrounding the new queen, and there are scout bees that take off from the swarm and search for a new location for the colony. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the scout bees somehow report to each other, say, I found a place over here. The other one says, no, I found a better one over here. The other one says, no, wait till you see what I found. And they have some kind of a dialogue, and they come up with a consensus as to which spot is the best spot for the swarm.
Mm-hmm. You think it's democratic? Think they take a vote?
I really would like to know that. It's fascinating.
I'm trying to picture this, like a caucus
right.
of a party.
Well, there's been, you know, people observe this, but we really don't know how they do it. But they come back to this swarm of one mind, and they, go ahead. Oh, and so, they lead this, I'll make it fast, they lead the swarm to the new location with the scout bees flying overhead, leading the swarm. And bees, as we have mentioned, have five eyes. They have three on top of their head,
really?
Which are called ocelli. They're not really fully functioning eyes, but they're light sensitive.
Light sensitive, right.
And the we think that the ocelli are for the purpose of keeping track of the scouts, which are streaking overhead, so that the bees can follow the scouts to the new location. So that's a natural swarm.
Mm-hmm.
And we were curious. I mean, what Brandon said is one solution is you put a new queen in,
mm-hmm.
or you call somebody and they come and take the swarm, which is what he said he'd
right,
be happy to do.
Right, another beekeeper would come.
Right, or you call the city and they'll send the and then someone relocates the swarm to an empty hive or to a new location.
Right. Okay, so that's good. I think we covered that terrific thing that we saw this morning up on the roof. And this is Bernie Wides and Carol Butler. And remember, Carol has this great book on bees called Why Do Bees Buzz? And we're going to sign off right now. And this is our second segment, right, Carol?
Yes.
Okay, so
we have another toast to beekeeping with this wonderful wine.
And then we'll come back on the air and we'll finish talking. I'll tell you about the city regulations and places where you can get more information about bees and anything else we got. And if we drink enough wine, we'll be buzzing ourselves.
Right, exactly.
So we'll be back in a minute. Hi, this is Bernie Wides, a naturalist. We're back on the air for our final segment about this show about bees. And we told you about this amazing morning. We got up here early and witnessed setting up new beehives. And it was really fascinating. And the good thing is neither Carol or I got stung at all. So,
but Brandon got stung, and so did Eric.
Yeah, Eric got stung once. But, you know, unless you're allergic to bee stings, the bee sting is just a little annoying. So if you're terrified by bees, then don't raise them. But they're really fascinating critters. So I'm going to talk about the New York City, what happened in New York City this last week. And I have a little article here from the New York City Beekeepers Association. It says, good news, New York City Beekeepers Association members and friends, the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene lifted the beekeeping ban on March 16th. And they're going to discuss the new regulations at one of their monthly meetings. Okay, and it says, welcome to the New York City Beekeepers Association, a hive for the urban beekeepers of Gotham City. That's very cute, a hive for the members.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just read these two paragraphs because it's in bee speak, I would say. We're a small group of beekeepers, bee enthusiasts, and honey lovers who live, work, and pollinate in the greatest city in the world, and who happen to share a love for the humble honeybee and her delicious doings. The mission of the New York City Beekeepers is to provide our membership with a medium for sharing knowledge and mutual interest in beekeeping, and to educate and promote the benefits of beekeeping to the world in a forum of friendship and fun, and to do so safely and responsibly in an urban environment. So whether you are a beekeeper with 10,000 colonies or you just like honey for your tea, you are welcome to join our hive. And they also offer a course for urban beekeepers. And if you're interested, it says become a member of our colony. And you can contact them. I think they're located on Broome Street in the city. And you can just go to their site, which is New York City Beekeepers. It's www.nyc/bees/org/. Okay, so, Carol, what I wanted to talk about now was some of the thing I got from New York City that people have to go through. People have been raising bees in New York City for years and haven't worried about the regulations. But if you're concerned about it, New York City, it's kind of strange, but it's under the Department of Health
and mental hygiene. Right.
So I would say that it's probably pretty good therapy, right? Beekeeping, right? Carol is a therapist. Would you recommend beekeeping as a hobby?
I'm not what do
you
so
think?
Sure.
You don't know.
Okay. Not for everybody.
Have to think about that, right?
Right.
Okay. So New York City Health Code, Article 161, requires persons keeping non-aggressive honeybees, Apis mellifera, is that how you say
yes.
that? Yeah, mellifera, I guess, to file a notice with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene containing the beekeeper's contact information and location of the hive. A copy of the notice form I have right here. So you don't need a license or anything to do it. You just need to notify the city where you're going to establish your hive. So it says that beekeepers are required to adhere to appropriate beekeeping practices, including, one, maintaining bee colonies in movable frame hives that are kept in sound and usable condition. So you really have to take care of your bees for their health and for safety and all that. You have to keep it clean and some other things. Provide a constant and adequate water source, because bees, as living creatures, need water. Mm-hmm. Locate the hives on a site so that the movement of bees does not become an animal nuisance. Because in the old regulations, bees were considered wild animals. You know, they're insects, but I guess they're in the animal kingdom, so yeah, they're included. So they were listed as wild animals. Beekeepers should be able to respond immediately to control bee swarms and to remediate nuisance conditions. Okay, so, and we just spoke about bee swarming.
Right.
Where we had Brandon here, who's he's doing this for about a year, but he's very knowledgeable. And Carol, who wrote the book, and we talk about swarming, how to control swarming, which is keep your bees happy and healthy. And if they do swarm, contact another beekeeper who will come and help you transfer the bees. Or you can call the New York City Department of Health, and they have a policeman whose duty it is to
come and get the swarms. They also have in
the
regulations, which is what he was talking about, you have to really monitor your hive.
Right.
And if the colony becomes overcrowded and there are a lot of dead bees, or the hive becomes sort of partly abandoned, you have to really be responsible for it. And that will also minimize the problems in the area and minimize the risk of a swarm.
Right. So the rest of the suggestions here are that you have to be aware of, as Carol said, aggressive, objectionable bee behaviors.
Right.
Now, these bees are not the African attack bees,
right,
those nasty bees that are moving up the coast.
Right. They hybridize with the honeybees.
Yeah.
But when you start a hive like Erica did, you buy the bees from a bee dealer.
Right.
And you know that they're not Africanized, that they're a particular strain of honeybees.
And honeybees are pretty peaceable folks.
Right, absolutely.
Only when they feel threatened will they counterattack. So hive placement or bee movement shouldn't interfere with pedestrian traffic or persons residing on or adjacent to the hive premises. So if you have a piece of property, you have to make sure to put your hive where it won't interfere with your neighbors. And if you have a large piece of property out in the woods somewhere, you don't have to worry that much. But in the city,
even better to put it on the roof in Bushwick,
yes,
Brooklyn.
So if you have access to your roof, it's a great place for it, because the bees will be out of everybody's way. And rooftop hives are terrific. And You have to be careful, as Carol said, for overcrowded, diseased, or abandoned hives. Any changes to the information provided in the notice form should be reported to the health department within 10 business days of the changes. Please call 311 if you have any questions, and they tell you where to return the form to, and you can get the form online from New York City. The email address is beekeeping@health.nyc.gov. And when you go to that website, you'll get the form from the city, which I'll just go over briefly, and you'll have all the information you need. And also, the city would like you to complete the survey of New York State beekeeper and apiary yard location data. And when you go to the city website, they'll give you the information about that, because the state wants to know how many beekeepers are working with the bees. They want to keep track of it. Okay, and the city encourages you to get training, and I'll give you some other sites that the city doesn't do any training, but Cornell University Master Beekeeper Program does give training, and I won't give you all the websites because you can go online and get it.
Right,
if you go to this email, you know, beekeepers at health, beekeeping, health, nyc.gov.
Okay.
And you'll get all these websites. Cornell has a lot of information. The Mid-Atlantic Apiculture. So that's another word for beekeeping, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Is that how you say it? Apiculture? Mm-hmm. Apiculture?
Apiculture.
Apiculture. Okay. And also the New York City Beekeepers Association, which I think are a very active group. So I'm going to look at the form now and see if there's anything else. Actually, they want to know where your beehive is. And so who owns it in case there's a complaint or a problem, and emergency contact. In case something does happen and the bees swarm, they want to know who owns the hive so they can contact it. But you should be around your bees all the time, as Carol mm-hmm. said, and keep a good eye on them. And you could probably tell if they're getting ready to swarm.
Right.
And you can head it off. Okay, so the city wants to know the location of the hive, whether it's backyard, front yard, roof side, or side yard. But I think rooftop is the great place if you have a flat roof. Okay, but if you're going to put your bees on somebody else's property and you get permission to do it, they would also like to know who's the owner of that property, just in case there's a problem.
Okay,
Carol?
Yeah, I this makes me think of something that I was asked on Saturday. I was down at Rutgers University. They had Rutgers Day, and my books are all published by Rutgers University Press, so they invited me down for the day to be in the tent with the books, which was a lot of fun. And a lot of people this was New Brunswick, New Jersey, which is about an hour south of the city on the train, and a lot of people came up to me and talked about bees there. They had bees and hummingbirds in their area. And they were asking me, how do you keep bees away from the yard, and how do you keep bees away from your hummingbird feeder? And we actually address that in the hummingbird book, and it's an interesting solution. Solution is sort of a... bees, the different pollinators are interested in different consistencies of nectar, which is very clever of Mother Nature, so that everybody can share the resources. Mm-hmm. They're not all fighting for the same flowers.
Right. Yeah.
And so what you do, if you have a hummingbird feeder, you use one part sugar to four parts water mm-hmm. when you make the solution. That's more or less what hummingbirds prefer. They'll drink it if it's not exactly that way, but that's really what they like. And if you have a concentration that's not what they like, they'll go to somebody else's feeder. So you really want to have it that way. And in order to keep bees away from the feeder, my co-author George West suggests that I don't know if it's his idea, but he suggested we put it in the book. You take a coffee can, and in the coffee can you make a solution of one part sugar to two parts water. So
that's a strong solution.
Much stronger than what the hummingbirds like.
Right.
You put that in a coffee can, and you just put some sticks in the coffee can, sticking out about 6-7 inches, and you put that in your yard, but away from the feeder, and that will attract the bees, and the bees will climb down the stick and sip the solution in the can, and so
that's a nice simple solution.
Terrific, simple, basic solution. Right. And somebody was asking about bees in the yard where they didn't have a hummingbird feeder, but I also suggested that they do that in the yard and see if they couldn't pull the bees away from the house and
put it in a corner or someplace.
Right. But I thought that's a terrific and very simple solution.
Great. Okay. So we're going to run out of time in a minute, but I want to mention, if you don't want to raise bees, but you're still interested in seeing them and observing them, there's something called the Great Pollinator Project that's going on. I think it's the fourth or fifth year, sponsored by the Center for Biodiversity at the Museum of Natural History.
Where we both work. We both volunteer.
And I'll give you that site. And in fact, maybe on our next program, we'll talk a little bit more about it. Mm-hmm. That's this week's program, bees, and it was great today because we were able to see the hive set up. And next week's program will be on hummingbirds, because of course my great guest Carol has written a book on hummingbirds. Do hummingbirds hum?
Very good.
And if you tune into next week's show, that's what the topic will be, and I'll talk a little bit about the Great Pollinator Project, because hummingbirds are also pollinators.
Absolutely.
Of plants. So we'll sign off now, and remember the sponsor today was the Barter House Wine Company, Artisanal Wines, and that's about it for today.